Glenn, I think there's enough people here that we better also put ourselves on mute. What do you say?
The conference is in lecture mode.
Okay. Lots of people are arriving. When you hear those beeps, it means that people are arriving, and welcome to this free phone seminar. You might also call it a sample class on using focusing with clients who are in traumatic states, who are in overwhelmed states, such as anxiety, panic, or other kinds of overwhelming emotions. And we welcome all of you who are here, calling in from all over the world. Those beeps that you hear are people arriving, and that's very exciting. In fact, just a moment, I'm going to find out how many people are on the call at this moment.
There are currently 66 participants in your conference.
So just to let everybody know, we have 66 people on the call right now. Very exciting, Glenn, huh?
Yeah.
Very exciting to know that there's this much interest in using focusing-oriented therapy, inner relationship focusing-oriented therapy, and I think the number of beeps will calm down pretty soon as we get going here. So everyone's on mute right now except for me and Glenn. I'm Ann Weiser Cornell. Glenn Fleisch is here. We welcome you to this call. Everyone's on mute. You are all on mute right now. That means that we can have a nice, clear call. You can speak. You can make noise. Nobody can hear you. Glenn and I will be talking for a while, presenting some of our program here. And then at some point, we'll be able to open up the call and hear your questions, comments, some of the situations that you might be wanting some comments and help with. And we'll be able to do that at some point. But at the moment, we're in what's called lecture mode. So we invite you to relax, settle back, and you probably want to take notes. And we're going to present some of our... In the email I sent most recently, we said we have 7 ways. I think we have more than that, Glenn.
Maybe eight,
maybe 9. more keep coming.
I would say there are general principles that relate to focusing and the body and trauma and overwhelmed, and then there are specific applications. those principles.
Let's talk first about those general principles.
Yeah, do you want to start? I guess the key is presence or self in presence.
Yeah, we've been calling it presence for years. Most recently we've started to call it self in presence. And that's that ability of the client to be, to have experience of his or her you can call it a larger self, the self quality, the ability to hold their own experience, to turn toward and even soothe and be empathic toward their own emotional states. And we believe that everybody has this ability, but people are more or less able to access it. And certainly somebody who's in one of these overwhelmed states is not accessing that ability at that moment. So the ability to be self in presence with your own emotional states is key. And it's the really underlies all the things that we're going to recommend. We really kind of have 7 or 8 ways to help the client find self in presence. And how that enables really quite a profound shift to happen for the client.
I would also want to say a little bit about what the state of overwhelm or trauma is, particularly in terms of the body.
Good.
You know, if we imagine that when our, you know, when our life process is going smoothly, that there's a way that each moment can be somehow processed, so that allows for the flow of our life energy or being to continue. And the body has that capacity. Yeah, the body knows how to heal itself, how to resolve both physical and psychological issues or problems. When there are certain states of, let's say, trauma that happen, could be early in life or at any point, it's one of two things usually. One is some particular state of some overwhelming experience that came upon a person or their body. That's what trauma is. That came on a person unexpected, unwanted, unbidden. Yeah, and at the time, the person's was not either developed enough, it was a child, or not had the tools to be in presence with what happened. So their body had to take over and became into states of what's called the fight, flight, freeze type of reactions. And these become kind of automated almost, so that when either similar type experiences happen, they get re-triggered. Or in Genlin's terms, there's a stoppage or a blockage in the life forward movement. And so that stoppage gets carried along with our body and our being all along. And so people can be in states of semi-overwhelm or trauma for a good part of their life, and often that's what brings people into a therapist or some healing process, is because those states have become either unbearable, unmanageable, a build-up, and or sometimes in the course of a therapy, as I'm sure many of you know, as you go deeper into a client's process, they hit on some place or get close to some place that feels very overwhelming.
Now, Glenn, you were saying there are two ways, two types. One is when trauma comes upon one in a single incident. Was that the distinction you wanted to make?
Yeah, that's right. And the other is when it's sort of a continual. Like for example, if somebody is in an abusive relationship or marriage over a period of 10 or 15 years or something like, or 20 years, if I've experienced even more than that, then it's called a cumulative trauma, where the body just accumulates. It's not like one particular incident or a certain time. It's a continuum.
Mm-hmm.
People who have been in war zones,
mm-hmm.
as we know, and actually focusing is being used there very wonderfully.
Mm-hmm.
Afghanistan, I believe.
Yeah.
So
war zones could also give rise to either of those kinds of traumas. Either the bomb goes off and you have a single incident, or you have just a continual experience of overwhelming things. So, and I think what you're saying is that the body knows how to heal. You know, it's not the incident itself that's necessarily traumatic. That if those resources are available at the time from the caregivers, from the people around one, and within oneself, then that will not become a trauma. Right?
That's right. So that's part of the principles, is to mobilize or activate both within the person's own being and body, their resources, as well as, of course, with you as the therapist or the guide, practitioner, to provide that kind of safe and supportive context and containment as well. And we'll go into that a little bit in our applications. Yeah, it begins to mobilize. You could say, if you want to draw it like in a diagram, or the sense of self is tiny and the trauma or overwhelm feels huge.
Right.
And that's often the experience, like I'm this little thing and then there's this huge thing that's coming over me or coming through me. And Anne and I were talking earlier that often it's like a battle, like I have to get rid of this anxiety. I don't want to deal with this overwhelm. et cetera, et cetera. So that's important because when people come to see us, they're often looking for us to do something to fix them or get out of or rid of. And there is something to that which we'll go into. It's not to ignore that need or that place that wants that. But in a sense, the key principle, again, is to develop that self that can be in presence. And so if we do most of the work, then that self in them becomes less capable, you might say, or feels like I need somebody else to do this. Now, of course, for a time, that may be necessary in a short term, or at least we work together. We work with the person mobilize their resources. And the only other thing I wanted to say, Anne, is on the body knowing its healing, that I've often observed, and this is even in the very first session with people and almost all the way through, that if we as the therapist are observing, we can notice ways either through verbally or through movement or gesture, that some way that the client's body or being is already indicating that the body knows some way forward,
mm-hmm.
some way to deal with this, that that's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
They just haven't accessed that. And that's where focusing is so crucial,
mm-hmm.
to bring presence and awareness and being with that, what the body already knows.
Yeah, we'll be given some examples of that as we go along, won't we? So just along the lines of general principles, again, I wanted to say, okay, the key concept is self in presence. The client has the ability to move into self in presence with the support of the therapist or facilitator. I think partly our confidence that state is available for that client. You know, I've sat again and again with people who at the beginning of the session really looked like they were falling apart, dissolving in tears, really very afraid of how anxious they were feeling, afraid of difficulty breathing, those kinds of states. And partly it's my confidence, my ability to just really be in my body, be in my own state of self and presence, and give these gentle invitations that we'll be talking about in a minute. That person, it's as if in the room we create this kind of faith or confidence in the person, in their wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just also to say that when people are not self in presence, when they aren't able to access that at the moment, which is often true at the beginning of our sessions, at the beginning of that first session, what's happening is that we would call that theoretically they're identified with something. So they're identified with the emotion itself. I'm so anxious. I'm so terrified. They'll say things like that. Or they may also be identified with a part of them that doesn't want the emotion or is afraid of the emotion or feels small, as Glenn said, in relation to the emotion. So I'm trying to get away from it. I need to get over it. This is too much for me. I don't want to go in there. That kind of thing. So that's being identified with a part or aspect of them that's afraid of the emotion. And then there's a third kind of identification, which is identification with a fixing part. Maybe that's more, I need to get over this, or I need to just put these thoughts aside, or I need to stop crying. The part of them that comes up with these solutions to the problem.
I would say that third one, the fixing part.
Yeah.
Not only clients, but therapists and often psychology in general is identified with that place.
Right.
The whole consciousness of fixing, getting rid of.
Yeah.
So it's, and I also supervise focusing therapists, and often in very well-meaning ways, as therapists, we can become, you know, because we care about our clients and we want them to get better and do better and feel better, right, that we can become identified with a fixing part.
Mm-hmm.
Either that we become that and the client looks that place and the client looks to us to fix it, or together we can start getting agitated ourselves if the client doesn't seem to be getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you try this, you know, and this happens quite often, that our body picks up that state of agitation or overwhelm and gets agitated ourselves inside.
And that's why it's so important.
Being in presence with our own inner states, because that will happen, is that so we're always working, at least I try to, that I'm sort of have double vision. I'm focusing on my own body sense, following it, and also with the client, and then also in our field. And it sounds like a lot of work, but when actually you're in presence, it's, it just kind of flows that way. I sense something, and it doesn't take away, I don't think, from being with. But
no.
I just wanted to mention that because in my supervision work, I noticed that quite often, that therapists get into or caught up with that side that wants to fix it or feels badly.
Mm-hmm.
The person isn't doing something, and it often comes into a doing place, Anne, wouldn't you say? That,
yeah.
What are we going to do?
What are we going
this?
To do about this? Oh, something in you feels we need to do something about this. Yeah.
And that, again, isn't to say that we don't sometimes encourage or come up with something to do, an action step or a...
Yeah. We're going to be giving a list of things that we actually do, but they're different. What all of the things we suggest to do enable the person to move into that, I call it a state of inclusion. I was talking to a client the other day. I said, ordinarily people who are in these states feel that the only way to feel peaceful is to push away the difficult feelings, that you have to escape from them or get away from them, or that the difficult feelings are unchangeable somehow and that you're in some kind of fight with them, and the only way to feel peaceful is to push them away. But what we were doing in that session was helping that person find a peacefulness in even from being with the difficult feelings. And that self in presence is a quality of inclusion where nothing needs to be pushed away, where the person feels larger than their difficult emotions, where they have access to a quality of strength, calm, courage, and compassion that doesn't have to push anything away. And that way it becomes a truly safe state, a state that they can really depend on, that doesn't have any anxiety in it. If you got to your peacefulness by having to push away your difficult feelings, then that's always a fragile state because those feelings might get strong enough to batter their way back in, right? So the peacefulness or the calm or the large quality that comes from including, turning toward all the difficult feelings, so much more trustworthy, so much more solid. And that's the state we're talking about, facilitating people to find that. Okay, so let's start talking about some ways to facilitate that.
One more thing, Anna.
Great.
Just spark another maybe general principle, and this comes straight from Jenlin's theory and writings, and that is, you were saying, you know, how difficult or bad feelings, and you know, we want to push them away, and they get, you know, a bad rap, or that's a negative feeling.
Mm.
If we hold, and this is where the theory and also our own experiencing gives us that confidence, that every difficult or bad feeling, no matter how overwhelming or traumatic, is actually the body pushing toward its own right way of being.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us that sense that there's something in that energy and in that feeling state itself that in its very being contains the very life energy we want.
Mm-hmm.
To now, that doesn't mean we just dive right into it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It does mean that it holds a place where it is the body pushing toward its own,
mm-hmm.
or Genlin's term is implying, moving toward its own right way of being.
Mm-hmm.
And the miracle, you could say, Anne, as we said, or the magic or the power of focusing is that giving it that space allows that process to happen.
Yeah, and there's also some specific things we can say as practitioners to help tap into that life-forward energy that's in every difficult feeling. Well, let's talk about that a little later. Yeah.
So we were going to start with some specific ways now that...
yeah, let's say this is number one. Go ahead.
Right, and the first one, or not necessarily that this is in any order, by the way,
right.
although often it does seem to be important at a beginning phase, is that we encourage, support, and even demonstrate active ways of grounding or finding some kind of anchor place. Sometimes even discourage going into difficult or traumatic states before the client is in presence or has their self in presence. So, for example, in some of my work with grounding, I do a lot of physical work with feeling embodied. Sometimes I do it sitting, and sometimes I work standing with some people, and we work on anchoring, feeling rooted, grounded, safe. And this is very important in overwhelm states.
How might you actually say that to someone, Glenn?
Well, I'll give an example. I have worked with a particular person for, let's say, a couple of years. And by the way, if we give examples, we do need to change identifiers so that there's no chance that confidentiality or
mm-hmm.
privacy will be breached. This particular person, through our work, it's probably more than 2 years, she has come close to something, and I don't even know what it is really, that is, she says herself feels very overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So as we get close, you can see her body starts to shake, she gets, you know, and she says, this is too much. And so what we've done, and I have said, well, maybe we first need to allow you to feel in your body and in yourself so that you can be present with this. So I work on specific things like, let's feel our feet. Let's feel the lower part of your body.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's sitting, I may say, and just notice your sitting bones. Feel your back against the cushion.
Mm.
And just see if it's okay to kind of let your body go into that space, like feel the support that the cushion provides, and if my voice is a support, feel that.
Mm.
And also notice your own being with yourself as a support. And then the sense is the wider environment is a safe container. So part of the principle there is to help the person feel that they have something they can count on.
Mm-hmm.
I have a client who, in his grounded state, sees himself as a tree. He likes to stand, and he feels more and more rooted. So he first gets into his tree,
mm-hmm.
and then he invites in what wants to come, and often that is very overwhelming or difficult states or places.
So that metaphor of a tree, I'm sure, came from the client, right?
From the client's sense of his body mm-hmm. and how it feels when he's in a grounded state.
And that becomes something you can invite at the start of the next session. It becomes more and more of a familiar state that people can find, and that they'll be finding all week, too.
Absolutely.
Not just in the sessions, yeah.
And one more thing is that finding some anchor place may be, notice some place in your body that feels okay.
Mm-hmm.
As we become identified with or caught up in that place that feels not okay, overwhelming.
Mm.
So I say, well, notice if your feet feel okay, just connected with the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they feel all right. Yeah, you actually feel kind of strong.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just notice that your own body has a place that can support you in that state.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really the connection of the safe place and containment and presence in relation to that other place that doesn't, it feels overwhelming, and Mm-hmm. So that's specifically how I would do that.
Mm-hmm.
There are many other ways, but that's one example. And if you think of a place in trauma that if it's contained or in presence, it feels safer.
Yes.
It's not just bouncing all over the place and has nowhere or sense of holding.
So thinking of holding, containing, in the same way you might really firmly hold a baby who is upset, the firmness of the holding is part of the safety. Yeah.
And the other part, and where the focusing comes in here, is and just notice what that feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we can just sense, what is it like to feel anchored or grounded in your whole body?
Mm-hmm.
Or some place that feels rooted. Just take some time with that. And you can almost sense the relief or the sometimes, like, oh, that feels better.
Yeah. I, too, have found that what I call lower body contact is very reliable for many people, feeling the feet. And if the person says, I don't know how to feel my feet, I'll say, how about wiggling your toes a bit? There your feet show up, don't they? And if you have trouble feeling your body's contact on the chair, just wiggle a little in the chair. Well, there you are. Now you can just feel that body contact. And that this is not something to only do at the start of the session, but to return to all the way through the session. For some people, whenever they say, I'm getting spacey, I'm losing contact with myself, people will give me a signal that they really would like my help in coming back into that sense of grounding, that sense of lower body support. And that is like the self in presence as the larger whole containing self. Okay? So the next one to mention has to do with body location. The invitation to notice where in your body you're feeling that anxious feeling, you're feeling that sad feeling, whatever it is that people are talking about, noticing where in the body they feel it. Because location, it becomes more manageable or more possible to be with when it's in a particular location. So a client might be saying, I just feel so anxious. I'm just so upset. I'm just so afraid. And after doing some of the lower body contact containing work that we've been talking about, I next might invite, so maybe notice where you feel that the most. So where you feel that, and if they say it's everywhere, okay. And maybe then noticing where you feel it the most or where you feel the center of it is. And then always people will point somewhere in that middle area of the body, throat, chest, stomach, somewhere in that area is the center of it, or it's where I feel it the most. And there's a calming quality when that place is localized, I find, because if it's, again, that has to do with the I'm so small in relation, or is it that I'm larger than to what's there? And when people can feel there's a place in the body where that is, something in me that's anxious, upset, terrified, overwhelmed, then that itself, just the simple localization of it, is a step toward being able to be with it as self in presence.
I could add one thing, and it sort of dovetails into the next specific method, if you will, is many times, and I'm sure you may notice yourself, that the client's hand goes right to the place where it's felt.
Mm-hmm.
Unknowingly, it's not like we ask them. We can do that, and that's another principle, is we can invite that, but sometimes it happens spontaneously. That you'll say, oh, I'm so anxious, and you'll notice their hand goes right to their belly, as if it knows that's where it is.
Mm-hmm. Even before we invited, notice where it is. The hand may just move
yeah,
there.
May go,
yeah,
it can go either way. The next principle of the use of hands to touch a place in the body. But sometimes that already has happened.
Yeah.
If it does happen, I had a client last week that that's exactly what happened, and she was describing an incident that was very overwhelming, and it was, I'm overwhelmed, you know, and then her hand, and actually it was very specific, it was her two fingers, went right to sort of a place right above her belly button area. And she wasn't aware of this. And I just invited, notice what your hand is doing, particularly those two fingers that are, seem to be kind of pressing in just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
See what that feels like, maybe, right there.
Mm-hmm.
See what that. And just maybe breathe right there. And she said, yeah, that it feels like it's kind of soothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one way that the body knows what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
by doing that.
And we just notice that it's happening, first of all, noticing that the hand moves. Maybe putting that into words, I see your hand goes there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've noticed much more, especially over the last few years, as I've become interested in movement and gestures and nonverbal indicators, that our observational skills are just as important as our empathy and felt body skills, noticing little movements and where the hand goes or some gesture or even just a change of breath, very slight. So maybe something there came that felt like a relief or an easing.
Yeah.
Now, if the client doesn't put their, you know, the hand doesn't go there, we could invite that.
Mm-hmm.
If someone says, you know, I don't know how to be with this. It's just who I am or something like that, or it's just all there or something like that. you know, you can either say notice what's happening already, if it is happening, like we said, or you may invite and notice how, notice if your hand might want to go right to some place.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can say no, or that doesn't feel right, and of course we would honor that.
I've especially found that helpful when I give the invitation to be with something, and people don't, and people say, I don't know how to do that. And then the invitation to, well, maybe you might allow your hand to gently move to that place as if your hand is you being with it there. And it can be a little hard to conceptualize. What does it mean to be with something that all day long and all week long I've been feeling, well, that's me. It's hard for the client to get it. How do I be with what feels like me? You might let a gentle hand move to that place. As if with your hand, you're saying to it, I'm with you. I'm keeping you company.
Sometimes, Anne, I know I have, if some people have a hard time doing that with themselves, so I say, sometimes I'll invoke, well, imagine if you have a friend who has a lot of anxiousness. You might, if you know them well, you know, you might put a gentle hand on their shoulder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, or just some reassuring, hold their hand, and it's kind of like that.
We can talk about being like a friend to that place.
Yeah.
Right.
So one other question that I ask sometimes is, since we don't know how to be with it, or you don't, maybe if you just allow your body to show you some way that it knows how to be with this, it's amazing that it often happens just that way.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Now, I just want to mention that what we're saying now assumes that being with is the essence of what we want clients to do, and that is true. That I think really underlying the whole effort, the whole intention of being with a client in overwhelmed states is to invite the client as self in presence to be with the difficult places. And it's a pure being with that doesn't try to fix or change or push away. And that it's from that quality of being with that the person can begin to then sense more, to have empathy for what that place is letting them know, what it's worried about, When the person from Self in Presence is able to be a listener to what the difficult state is feeling, and what especially what it's not wanting or what it's worried about, then we'll really see some shift, some forward change. And part of what we're saying when we're talking about the grounding, the body location, the use of the hand, these are ways of helping the client be with their felt experience rather than being identified with it. Give me just 1 second. I want to check something here. Hold on.
There are currently 91 participants in your conference.
Okay. So we'll say a little more, and then we'll be interested in your questions. I think we've mentioned three. Actually, I think we've mentioned four, Glenn, because we also talked about noticing a place in your body that feels okay. That was one of them also.
I think in addition to being with, I would just add that it also helps clients begin to feel a sense of trust or confidence that it's within their own resources, or their own body and their own self, that they can hold these places. And that their body has ways of healing. I use lots of little metaphors to help that. You know, like if you cut your finger, I told the client, or you have a blister, if you pick at it, you know, you make it worse usually. But if you just let it be, it heals itself,
mm-hmm.
usually quicker than if we try to do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing, another one we didn't say yet is the use of we.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is important, particularly at the beginning of therapy, but it can be all the way through. Sometimes it's very supportive, and it's just, instead of just saying, can you be with that, can we be with this place?
Mm, let's be with it, you and I. Mm-hmm.
So it's there as a communal support, like, it isn't just me, the therapist, being with it, and it's not just them, which it's us, we. And so I think that's a very, it also builds on the relational aspect that, okay, we together, you and I, will be with this place. We can contain it, and we will hold it. And so I often will... we'll invite that, we'll use we, we'll... And there are other ways that kind of we-ness can be evoked and nurtured throughout therapy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're not just saying this is just the client's own self and presence. Eventually that's what we would hope and want to be with. But we also can be with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone once described focusing-oriented therapy is that we are with, the therapist is with the client in such a way as to help them better relate to their own experiencing.
Right, and that's why we call our work inner relationship. Our emphasis is on the client's inner relationship, the ability to be with what's there, and then the interpersonal relationship between therapist or facilitator and client is supporting the inner relationship of the client, and sometimes gives that model for how what that inner relationship can be like. You can be with that place in you as you and I together can be with that place. And before we open up to questions, I certainly want to mention possibly my favorite method for supporting presence. And that's what I call presence language. That as a guide or facilitator, when we're speaking to the client, using this language, if possible, reserving the word you to the client to mean the client in presence. And to refer to the overwhelming emotion as it or that place or something in you. And of course, if that doesn't work for the client, if they don't feel met or understood by that language, I would use whatever language they need to help them feel understood. But Again and again, I'm returning to this way of speaking that people find actually very helpful. So you're sensing something in you really feeling upset right now. You're feeling that place where your hand is having a hard time knowing how to go forward. Following that up with, maybe you can just be with that. Or maybe you can let it know you hear it. So I'm giving invitations to the client as you that are relational invitations toward the place inside. You might let it know that you hear it. So they're invitations that I'm giving that support a relational quality of process within the client. And sometimes I will even invite the client to use presence language. So the client is saying, I'm so upset. And I'm saying, you're sensing something in you is upset. And the client continues to speak in what I would call an identified way. Yeah, I just can't stop being this upset. I'm afraid. I'm just going to lose it. I'm not able to work. I'm not able to sleep. And I'm continuing to say, you're really sensing how hard that is for something in you that you are having a hard time working and sleeping. And at some point I may say to the person, you might try saying it this way. Try saying, I'm sensing something in me is so upset. So it's a little bit of teaching, an invitation for them to actually use that language. And if I time it right, like I'm not doing that in a kind of pushy or in a hurry way, but I'm waiting until a moment when it feels like there's a readiness to hear that, then I'm seeing people feeling a great deal of relief from that type of language. And often I'll invite them to notice what the difference is when they say it that way. I'm sensing something in me is upset. And of course that will go along with feeling it as a localized body place, using the hand to be with that place, and using the language, I'm sensing something in me. They all support each other as methods.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just add one more.
Great.
Very quickly, and that is, years ago, I began to observe, and Ann knows this, that in clients who would first come in states of overwhelm, that their body was moving, particularly their arms or hands, in some particular way that they were not aware of, that seemed to indicate that there was some embodied or inner knowing of some way forward. And I found that allowing a client or inviting them to notice that and sense what it might be telling them is a very powerful way of beginning to develop that process that we're talking about. So, for example, if a client is, oh, I'm so overwhelmed, I don't know what to do, I can't, and yet their hands are moving in this kind of outward position, like they're putting up a big stop sign. If you, that if you invite them, notice what your hands are doing or your arms, and what does that feel like? It feels like I'm just telling everyone to just get away from me or back off or something like that. Ah, so something in you knows that, and just see what that's like. Yeah, and they get a real relief from sensing from the gesture or the movement that they found a life forward step from within their own body movement and body awareness, body knowing. That's not just at the beginning, by the way, of therapy. It can be anywhere through the process.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention that.
Now, I find your work with movement very exciting, and I know there's a lot more that can be said about that. Let's just briefly mention our program this fall. Gwen and I will be offering a 2-year program in focusing oriented therapy and using therapy with clients that is composed of a 3-day in-person retreat, and then phone classes, very much like these, except with more interaction. Smaller groups, more interaction, but at the same time of day. And very in-depth and very supportive course of study. And this three-day retreat that's coming up in September, it's September 25 through 28, is also a standalone training that you can take, even if you don't want to take the two-year training, in which we'll be demonstrating and experiencing smoothly integrating focusing-oriented moves into what you already do. It's something that you can combine with any method of therapy using facilitative language. Glenn will be able to demonstrate that orientation toward the client's movement that he was just talking about. That's very, very exciting. And we welcome your interest. You can learn more about that program in the Focusing Resources website. That's all I want to say about that. Let's open up.
I wrote a whole paper on that.
On the movement, on the gestures, yeah.
Accepted for publication, so if anyone's interested, you can send us an email.
And you'll send a copy.
I'd be happy to forward you a copy of the paper.
That's terrific. I think that should be a prize for anybody who's taking this call. They get to email Glenn for a copy of his paper. Let's open up the lines and see who would like to have a question or want us to say more about something that we're saying here. Hold on.
Hi, Anne. This is Richard Louie from Sacramento.
Well, great to hear you, Richard. Have you got a question?
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to, first of all, get your email address for that paper, Glenn. I'm very much interested in movement therapy. I'm also an expressive arts therapist and use movement.
Glenn's email address is glennfleisch@aol.com. That's two N's in Glenn, and Fleisch is F-L-E-I-S-C-H.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello, go ahead.
Well, I was just wondering if you could just summarize what the seven ways were. I you know what I mean? It was very
yes.
vague.
We'll say them again. Let's hear another couple of questions, and then we can go offline to answer them. Who else has one?
I'm wondering about the retreat. If you can't make that, which I can't, would we still be able to be part of the class?
We're working on ways to enable people to be part of the classes without going to the retreat. We'll be letting the email list know about that when we work that out. One more question, two more questions, so we can go and mute ourselves again. Yes.
Richard again. Yes. Nobody else. I have a quick question. Would you give suggestions for, as you create the safe container, what would be some good wordings or questions to help the client ask what their needs are? A lot of the issues are unmet needs. Can you give some, you're such a good linguist, a great language, and at honoring our basic body needs for self-esteem or whatever.
All right. We'll answer that in a minute, Richard.
Sure.
Now, if you're wondering how to unmute yourself to ask a question, it's the same way, *6. I heard Vivian before.
Hi, Anne. This is Carol.
Carol, go ahead.
What if a client says, just stays anxious and says, I don't want to be with this. It feels too uncomfortable. I just don't want to.
All right. All right. Very good. Okay. I think that's probably enough questions to hold us for a while, Glenn. Let's get back to peace and quiet here.
The conference is in lecture mode.
Oh, boy.
You know, we have a lot of people on the call. There's over 90 people on the call, and that's, you know, why it's a little bit hard to hear. Okay, let's just...
Anne, okay?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay.
We all hear you, my dear. You're just fine.
Thank you.
Let's summarize the 7 points, and then we're going to talk about the client's needs, and also what if the client just says stays anxious and says, I don't want to be with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's our 7 points. Number one, encourage ways of grounding, lower body support, and so on. Number two, body location. Overwhelming feelings are more manageable when they're felt somewhere. Number three, the use of the hand, noticing if the hand goes to a place in the body, inviting the hand to go to a place in the body to be with what's there. Number four, notice some place in your body that feels okay. There's something, like feet perhaps, or an area of the body that feels okay. Number five, the use of we. So the language of you and I, let's be with that. Number six, presence language. You are sensing something in you that feels upset. And even 6A, inviting the client to speak in presence language as well. I'm sensing something in me. And number seven was movement as a therapeutic avenue, about which much more could be said. But really, it relates to what we were saying about the difficult feeling having its own right way of being, or the body knowing its way forward. Glenn has been doing an amazing amount of study and work in noticing in the movements of the client that there's some kind of knowing about what's needed and what would be right, which actually relates to Richard's question. So you can often see in the movement of the client. Maybe you even have another example of that, Glenn.
Yeah, in other words, Richard, for example, again, just a very, very brief note about Jenlin's theory, that he'll say that the body will generate the object or something that it needs to move it forward. So, for example, a client is in a state of overwhelm, and this is more or less true situation, reporting all this pressure, anxiety, stress, tension. And so, and this particular client liked to stand, so I invited her to stand, we did grounding. And then, without even prompting, her arms moved upward and out, and as we invited presence with that, what came was, this is what I'm needing. I need much more spaciousness. I need to be in my own space. And this brought a relief and this kind of thing. Another client had a same thing. It was moving in a certain way that indicated like creating a protective shield around them. And these kinds of things. So now verbally, clients will also say that I'm just needing a break here or something like that. Ah. So you're getting some sense from your body that that's what you're needing. Let's just see if we can be with that. And you know this, a client will say, I just need a vacation. And they'll say, oh, that's stupid. I can't afford a vacation.
Yeah. So sometimes we have to listen for that forward life movement in among all the client's words of, I can't do that, or it wouldn't be. Now, wait a minute. Before we go into whether you can do it or not, how about just having the wanting for that? Just letting your body have the feeling of wanting some time off, or wanting a really close, loving relationship, or wanting a family or a home of your own. So often, it's another thing that can feel difficult to people is having their own wantings. It can be very painful, but we can help them sit with, allow the feel in the body, like noticing, just allowing the feel of the wanting for that, which usually actually feels good if they can allow it to be there. We have just a few more minutes. Let's address Carol's question of what happens when the client says, I don't want to be with this, it's too much. Well, the way we would understand that is that there's another something there that the client is identified with, and that we can invite being with that. And I might first say, yeah, you don't want to be with that. You're really sensing that that's too much right now. And first I would just agree with that. You're like, great, let's not go there yet. Let's not go there ever until you feel really ready. First, just sit here. Have your body in the chair. Take a little vacation from those difficult feelings. Look out the window. Feel your feet, feel your toes, and really honor that place in you that knew it wasn't right to go there yet. And do you see how we're hearing, again, this is really similar to the previous answer, the person is telling us something that they need when they say, I don't want to go there. They're telling us something they need. Let's honor that as a knowing. You have a knowing it's not right to go there yet. Great.
And I would add, there's many creative ways to facilitate what Anne is saying, you know, and that we won't have time to go into. I will say one other thing. There was a situation a little while ago where a client came in and said that exact thing. Not only don't I want to go in that to that, I don't even want to really be here today. I said, oh, okay, so let's be with that and see if that's... And she said, no, I really don't want to be here today. I just didn't feel right just not coming. I said, oh, well, just stay with what that is and let your... Do whatever feels right. She said, it feels right that I leave, and I'll see you next week.
Glenn.
I said, okay.
Okay, see you next week.
And she was very appreciative that I didn't argue, do anything other than, is that a whole body, whole person response? And she said, yes.
Mm.
I said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to identify if that's a whole person response or need or some place. And that makes a big difference. Because
mm-hmm.
if someone really says, I just really, really, really don't want to be here, and I don't even really want to do anything, I just didn't want to just not show up, so I'm telling you. And I said, oh, well, I appreciate that, and we'll see you next week.
Glenn, speaking about seeing them next week, we do have another call next week that's on a related but quite opposite, really, topic, and that is using interrelationship focusing methods with clients who are in low energy states like depression or lack of affect, who feel nothing or who feel very down and depressed. So that'll be interesting. We invite everybody to join us again for that. The recording of this call will be posted on the website in the next few days. And you can write to me or Glenn for a copy of Glenn's paper. And you can also read more about our retreat and our two-year training on focusingresources.com. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here with us.
We'll talk to you
Thanks.
Next week,
Thanks.
Hopefully many of you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.